develop in hydrodynamic flow media. And you have seen that everything was very simple there, especially when you consider the scales which are larger than the scale of the horizon, because everything is frozen there. And intuitive understanding for that is very simple, just on the scale larger than the horizon, when perturbation of the scale larger than the horizon scale, then you understand that the frequency is very low, because frequency is proportional to the wavelengths. And perturbation just during cosmological time have no chance to evolve because of causality reasons. If it would be sound waves, then the sound wave, if you would consider it on the scales or the times, which are much, much smaller than the time of oscillation, then it would look like frozen. Then when perturbation enter horizon, then of course they start to evolve, sound waves behave like sound waves, etc. But this is more complicated thing, and I will do it a little bit later. But before I will go to this thing, I want to discuss the origin of this perturbation. Namely, I want to derive the spectra of inhomogeneities which were generated on inflation. And I also told you that if I will take some scalar field, for instance, or any other field, gravitational field, then in Minkowski space there always exist inevitable quantum fluctuations. And of course, the amplitude of this quantum fluctuation depends on the scale. And as we derived, the typical amplitude, of course, fluctuation is fluctuation, so it's squared and square root of the things, yeah? Typical amplitude of fluctuation on physical scale, L is just equal up to the numerical coefficient in Planck and units for massless scalar field, 1 divided by physical scale. You see, and for gravity wave, which could be reduced also up to polarization to the scalar field, you have the same formula in Minkowski space. And we are working in units which are Planck units. So scalar field is measured in Planck unit. L in this formula also is measured in Planck units. It means that L you measure in the units, okay, of 10 minus 33 centimeters. Now, this formula is applicable in Minkowski space, but if we will take universe and we'll consider scales which are smaller than inverse curvature scale, then what does it mean, this thing? It means that in these small scales, I can always, in principle, introduce coordinate systems, so-called free-foreign Einstein elevator, where I can treat space-time as Minkowski space-time. Therefore, this formula which I derived could be used on all scales smaller than the curvature scale. Oh,
you said that everything is measured in Planck units, but this is just scalar field in Minkowski space, so where does G need to come?
It doesn't matter, because actually you could, in principle, take, how it's called, G Newton, then build quantities, like Planck quantities, 10 minus 33 centimeter, then 10 minus 43 second, and then say that it's actually this number of units. You see, if you want to get things to be completely dimensionless, then you need to involve gravitational constants.
Dimensionful.
This is dimensionless. Everything is dimensionless, because Planck, the scalar field also can be measured in Planck units. If you would use C, H, and G constant, then you could build always some combination with the necessary dimensions.
So that L is dimensionless for you?
L is dimensionless. So if you want, you could understand it's L like divided by L Planck, like this one. Then scalar field, you could also divide it by phi Planck, something like this one, And then you are getting this formula. Because scalar field also you could measure instead of just units, which people use usually, dimensionful, in dimensionless units.
I can understand from what? Scalar field has mass dimension 1, so it's one of the lengths.
Yeah.
It's on dimensional reason.
Then you don't need here anything. It's on dimensional reason, you don't need here anything. So if you use, for instance, these units like 10 minus 33, 10 minus 43 centimeter, then temperature 1032 degrees or 1019 degrees, and everything could be expressed in this thing, and you don't need to keep any kind of constant actually in formulas. Now, let's go and consider gravitational waves. As I told you already, the gravitational waves are defined in the gauge invariant way the following. So it's so-called, you consider only special part of the electric perturbation, and then you claim that this special trace is equal to zero and HT IKI is equal to zero. So it's four conditions which restrict the number of independent components here to two, so which correspond to two polarization. Now, this scalar field amplitude, not scalar field, gravitational wave amplitude in expanding universe satisfy very simple equation, okay, which we could write like this one, yeah? So H2 prime IK, then plus 2 A prime over A, H IK prime, minus Laplace H IK is equal to zero. Now, in principle, what could you do? You could derive Lagrangian for these gravitational waves. How you derive Lagrangian normally? You take Einstein action and expand it up to second order in this metric perturbation. And then you are getting Lagrangian from which you could derive canonical variable, and then you can quantize this scalar field. But the not scalar field, gravitational wave, but the quantization are reduced to the quantization of scalar field. And if you will introduce just polarization tensor, you could write scalar, or not scalar field, but gravity wave in the following form. Yeah, so it will be, okay, let me write like this one, normalize on this variable. EIK, where EIK is just constant polarization tensor, which for the plane wave perturbation, yeah, satisfied condition like KI, EIK is equal to zero, and also EII is equal to zero. So you see, it's very simple condition. And then, up to this polarization tensor, which is of the order of one, yeah, some quantity of the order of one, everything is reduced to the scalar variable. If we will forget now about accuracy, if we'll try just to get the answer in up to the order of magnitude, what we have to do in this case, we have to take this gravity wave, consider its evolution, then impose initial condition which correspond to the minimal quantum fluctuation, and then see how these initial quantum fluctuations are developing this time. So, this variable, as I said, will satisfy the following equation. If you would substitute this prescription in the equation for the gravity wave and would consider perturbation, okay, which is plane wave perturbation, then for this plane wave perturbation, k here is not index its wave number, you will get the following equation. K prime over A, OK is equal to zero. And we found solution of this equation already, right? Because you could consider here two limiting cases. One case is when k eta squared, k eta is much smaller than one. It's a perturbation which has the scales larger than the curvature scale. I explained it last time in detail. In this case, you have for uk solution, okay, so it was c1, then a plus c2 a integral d eta over a squared. And this solution corresponds to solution for the gravity wave. Okay, let me skip the indices. Okay, so will be, when will be gravity wave amplitude will be c1 constant plus c2, and then here was integral d eta divided by a squared. This mode, as I explained, is normally decaying mode, where the universe is filled. Okay, doesn't matter by what is filled in this case. Besides, so the case where pressure is equal plus epsilon. But for instance, if you would consider the Sitter universe, then it's also decaying mode. Why? Because in the Sitter universe, if you remember, scale factor is proportional exponent ht, or in terms of conformal time, I wrote also this formula, it was 1 divided by h eta minus. And eta in the Sitter universe, and flat the Sitter universe, was changing from minus infinity till plus infinity, till zero. When eta goes to zero, then scale factor is blowing up in conformal time. It corresponds to the exponential growing in physical time. So if you substitute it here, then you see that in the Sitter universe also, this term will be proportional to eta cube, yeah? If you substitute it here. And it means that it's decaying very fast. So on the scale like is in the horizon scale, evolution of the perturbation is very simple. So it's just frozen thing. Now, in the scales which are much smaller than the curvature scale, let me say not horizon, but curvature scale, event horizon in the Sitter universe, you have U proportional exponent EKX, EKX, because you could neglect this term compared to the first one. And therefore, amplitude of the gravity wave in the scale smaller than the curvature scale is decaying inversely proportional to the scale factor when you stretch this perturbation. Now, we want to fix the initial amplitude for this gravity wave to be minimal amplitude. Where can we do this thing? Clearly, we can do this thing only when consider perturbation, when consider perturbation in the scale smaller than the curvature scale. Why? Because in the scale smaller than the curvature scale, space-time is nearly Minkowski in three-folding coordinate system. And you know how to define vacuum in Minkowski space. When you consider scale which are larger than the curvature scale, then you know perhaps people who studied this quantum field theory in external field, yeah, they know that the definition of particle, definition of minimal fluctuations there becomes very, very unambiguous. But we don't care about it. Now let's consider scale which are smaller. So here we will draw amplitude of gravity wave, because what I derive here for delta phi, yeah, what it was in Fourier representation, is the typical amplitude in the given scale L. So in terms of Fourier component, what is this delta phi L? If I would expand everything in terms of Fourier component. You know that in Fourier, so it would be k cubed multiplied by delta phi k squared and square root of this quantity, where k corresponds to, okay, 1 over L. Correct. If you would take, so it follows just from dimension consideration, from dimensions here. This quantity, Fourier component squared multiplied by k cubed, has dimension, the same dimension as scalar field itself. You could do it very easily, you just expand, if you think in Fourier harmonics, then square it, and then you are getting the delta phi squared under the integral multiplied by k cubed, dk. But its dimensionless quantity, or its quantity with the appropriate dimension in terms of Fourier harmonics, which characterizes the typical amplitude of perturbation, okay, measured on the scale L, okay, when you smear over all other scales. Now, here you have for the gravity wave things like this one over k cubed. Here you have physical wavelength lambda. What is physical wavelength lambda? It's approximately scale factor divided by Kamuvian wave number. Yeah? Because 2 pi divided by k is Kamuvian wavelength, and Kamuvian wavelength multiplied by scale factor is nothing more than just physical wavelength measured in centimeters. Now, where can we define spectra here? Only in physical scales smaller than h minus 1, smaller than curvature scale, because we know that in smaller scales, what you have? You have Minkowski space, And in Minkowski space, you know what are the vacuum fluctuations. So what, with what we begin here, with the spectra like this one, where amplitude here is inversely proportional to lambda, physical scale. And here, on these scales, amplitude of the gravity wave has size of the order of h, because lambda here, okay, at the point, at the scale of the order of curvature, is lambda is of the order of h minus 1. So substitute h minus 1 here, then you understand that here you have amplitude h. And we know what are the quantum fluctuations here, in principle. They are like this one. Here, we have no idea what is going on.
Just a minute.
Yeah.
We stop here on the table. So, so you have hk squared k cube for k's which are bigger than h minus 1. Huh?
Yeah, so which are smaller than h minus 1. For lambda, smaller than h.
For lambda, yes, but for k, correspondingly bigger.
For k, very large, yeah.
So, why is proportional to 1 over lambda?
Why over lambda? Why it's proportional? Because, I explained it last time, yeah, in the lecture, at the end of the lecture, that in this case, you have massless field. And this thing actually is a typical amplitude of vacuum fluctuation for the massless field, which is decaying inversely proportional to the scale. In larger scale, if there would be mass, then there would be one extra scale.
So in terms of k, h k squared k cube
is proportional k.
Okay, the first power.
First power, yeah. You could do it differently, okay? So you know that for vacuum fluctuations, you have delta phi. K, delta phi k proportional 1 divided by square root of k, yeah. Then there is exponent, and here creation annihilation operator. So delta phi k, yeah, in this case, is 1 divided by square root of k. So delta phi k squared is 1 divided by k multiplied by k cubed, give you k squared, the square root of k squared is k. So it's the same thing. So this is in fact the amplitude of vacuum fluctuation in the expansion for people actually who prefer the formal thing in the expansion of the field operator in terms of creation annihilation operators. Because in more precise or in more rigorous theory, the whole thing is done like this one. It's integral 1 divided by square root of 2k perhaps, I don't remember. Then exponent ekx plus e or minus e plus e omega theta, yeah, omega is k for massless field. Here is annihilation operator and plus conjugated part. And this thing takes on the vacuum state. But let's actually don't put in the head actually all this kind of formal thing, because this formal thing you can find in every book, including my book, yeah? Where everything is done rigorously. And what I will tell you right now, what I would never write, yeah, because it's very non-rigorous. But nevertheless, this non-rigorous thing helped quite a lot of intuition, because you understand that here the only input from the whole quantum theory is Heisenberg-Hausdorff interrelation, which tells that there are minimal fluctuations here, which I know for sure in the linear order what they are. And I do not know what fluctuations here, yeah.
Is there any reason why you do 1 over x, function 1 over x of the line?
No, it's no reason. It's just how it's called. I work in logarithmic space. Yeah. So it's logarithm lambda, in fact. You see here, it's logarithm lambda if you want. But you can actually write lambda, put just the things here like this one, yeah? How people do it. That's all. No problem. So now, what happens with this perturbation? At the beginning, we know what they are. Now, let's take this perturbation, okay, let's cross it like this one, and let's see how it evolves. Yeah? First of all, when time goes on, it's initial moment of time. So it's spectra at eta is equal eta initial. So now, time goes on, scale factor grows. Right? Then, what happens with this perturbation? First of all, its physical wavelength is growing proportionally to scale factor. So it means that the given physical wavelength is moving on the right. Correct? For the given k, for the given Kamovian wave number. So the perturbation is redshifted. Now, second thing, what happens with the amplitude of this perturbation? The amplitude of this perturbation, because it has scales smaller than the horizon scale, so it satisfies this condition, yeah? The amplitude of this perturbation is dropping inversely proportional to scale factor. So what does it mean, this thing? It means that this perturbation, in the course of expansion, just stays on this line. Nothing happens with it, because amplitude drops inversely proportional to scale factor, size grows proportional to scale factor. So, okay, when we arrive here, the amplitude will be 1 divided by physical scale. So you understand that on one side, it looks like there is some kind of evolution there. On the other side, nothing happens with this spectra of vacuum fluctuation in Minkowski space, in this case. So this evolution is partially fictitious evolution, as you understand, because the spectra is unchanged. You just take Minkowski space, you could think about it, and consider it in expanding coordinate system. Now, but when you are doing formal calculation, for instance, in this expanded coordinate system, then what happens? Then actually interesting thing happened. This perturbation, of course, was taken from here to here, and here it has so-called minimal amplitude. But what is replaced here? This by what this perturbation, which had this physical wavelength, is replaced by some other perturbation which comes from much smaller scales. Yeah, and if you would wait for a very long time, then you would find that the perturbation which is replacing this perturbation, which actually was stretched to larger scale, is replaced by perturbation which had at the beginning scale which is smaller than the Planckian scale. This was the reason why people raised question about this super Planckian problem. And actually, they wrote a lot of papers about it, assuming what actually happens with the spectra here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you understand that it's in fact not a real problem. It's a problem in the head of the people, in some sense, but it's a problem of the method which we are using. Because you could think equally well that it's not replaced by perturbation in terms of physical things, yeah? But when you took this perturbation away from here, then because of Heisenberg uncertainty relation, there was again here generated field with a minimal amplitude of fluctuations. Also, by the way, when you are doing this kind of consideration for a very long time, and when perturbation comes from some Planckian scale, then, in fact, when you do this calculation rigorously, then you understand that it's up to a certain extent nonsense. Because when you go to some Planckian scale, then you know that in some Planckian scale you can trust in nothing. You cannot trust in this equation, you cannot trust in this solution, because this solution was obtained, for instance, on some classical background. And in some Planckian scale there is no classical background. Therefore, everything what we need to be sure just that in this part of the spectrum between Planckian scale and h minus 1 scale, we have simply Minkowski vacuum. Doesn't matter how do we describe it, in expanding coordinate system or in coordinate system which is not expanding and which could be introduced on the scale smaller than h minus 1. Why do we use expanded coordinate system in this case? Because we want, in a natural way, to relate these scales which are smaller than the curvature scale with the scales which are larger than the curvature scale in one coordinate system.
Can you remind what is the expanded coordinate system?
Expanded coordinate system is Friedmann coordinate. So where metric takes the form ds squared is equal a squared as a function of conformal time, d n squared, and here you have minus delta ik for gravity wave plus hik dxi dxk. So we expanded coordinate system.
Conformal time so that the whole interval is proportional to a square.
Which interval?
Space-time interval.
Yeah. So suspended coordinate system. Now.
What exactly are you saying? Is you're saying that if I go up that line, my physics breaks down. I don't know what I should do. So why do I conclude from that that there is no transplanting?
There is no transplanting.
Are you saying that that it is dominated if I just look at the uncertainty fluctuations that is more important?
Yeah, absolutely. Because actually everything what comes formally from Saplankian scales, you just assume it comes in the right place. Just okay, you remain the space-time remaining Minkowski.
So you're saying that if I replace whatever the Planckian Saplankian physics is with just random the random physics of the uncertainty principle, that should be dominant.
Absolutely. Because you could assume that he even spectralized this one. But then you just assume that all these fluctuations, when they are stretched, they come in the right place and they remain minimal fluctuation. And you also understand that if there is no source for excitement of perturbation, then why you have to get in the next moment of time something what will be larger than the minimal quantum fluctuations. Nothing. You see, you could not excite perturbation. You could take spectra which has very, very large occupation number, for instance, in Saplankian scales. But you understand that there is no reason for that. For that also you need some kind of energy. And if you would assume that there is no energy, then everything what will be left as a result, of course, will be left just minimal quantum fluctuations. You cannot rid of minimal quantum fluctuations, and all other things actually just would be thrown away as a result of expansion in this sense. So it's in Hawking derivation, derivation of Hawking radiation, because there is also infinite redshift factor. People faced with the same problem, as you understand. And some people also raise the question, what is the role of super Planckian energies for the Hawking radiation? In fact, there is no any role of super Planckian energies because it's the same fictitious effect. You could make consideration jumping from one coordinate system to the other, step by step, and controlling the things, in the range of scales where you can control them. But it will be actually a little bit more sophisticated consideration from technical point of view. Therefore, if you don't want actually to face technical problems, usually you take something that is not completely justified, like the same coordinate system, where there is redshift from Saplankian scale, and then do the things there. The only thing about which you want to be sure that doesn't matter what was in Saplankian scale, everything when it comes actually in this kind of scales where the things are trustable, are minimal vacuum fluctuations.
So you could see that Planckian correction that minimal.
Yeah, but there could be some correction. But they will be extremely small, you see. Also, people change, they were changing dispersion relation. But even this kind of gain, this dispersion relation was completely unjustified because, as I told you already, you cannot even write this equation when you consider physical scale which are smaller than the Planckian scale, you see. Because in the scale which are smaller than the Planckian scale, for instance, gravity wave fluctuations becomes of the order of one, and you cannot trust in your background.
Yeah, but even not relying on that, just dimensional analysis.
Yeah.
Minimal uncertainty, you add terms that are small because they're Planckian suppressed.
Yeah, it will not give you, it will not give you actually too much addition. And actually, this kind of situation, you know, Parentani used a very nice word actually, 5 years, not five, 10, 50, 10 years ago when we were discussing this. He says that there is a universal washing machine which lives in Minkowski space, nicer from Planckian, sub-Planckian scales. But by some kind of curiosity, in 5 years after that, he started to work on super-Planckian problem. Yeah, so it's just a little bit funny. But of course, he came to the same conclusion that this problem is irrelevant in this case, because everything what we are using is the presence of Minkowski fluctuations. Now, what happens with perturbation after that? Okay, so we are stretching this perturbation. And then H, for instance, in this iter, H minus 1 scale stays precisely constant. So finally, perturbation leaves Einstein elevator. It's possible, as we will see in a minute, only if on the stage when you have accelerated expansion. Because in normal universe, which is filled by normal matter, this scale also is moving on the right. But let's for a minute consider precise de Sitter, because this consideration also is valid in precise de Sitter. Yeah? Then, this scale stays constant. When this perturbation will reach this scale, what will happen with it after that? Its scale starts to exceed curvature scale. You see, so this condition will be satisfied. You understand that in de Sitter universe, eta is decreasing. You see here the thing. So it's better to put here absolute value. If eta is decreasing, you begin with this condition, then finally you will satisfy. You begin with this condition, eta is decreasing, then finally this condition will be satisfied. It's also the same thing which I am saying, but just in a different language. Then when perturbation will create this curvature scale, then, okay, this solution should be ready. So, this perturbation will have constant amplitude plus decay. Forget about decay and amplitude. So, what will happen after the perturbation? Leave this horizon and then keeps constant amplitude and will be stretched somewhere here. Correct? Correct. And amplitude of this perturbation will be of the order of h. So what will be of the order? So square root of h k square k cube, yeah, for the given k, will be equal to h, okay, which correspond to the Hubble constant during this decision.
So what remains constant? H k or h k?
Which h k?
Well, you have one under the square root. And the other one that
might work. It's the same thing here. The thing is, it's HK. No, what remains constant, this is amplitude, this is amplitude, amplitude. So this is what is written down here. It's in fact amplitude of physical. No, K is constant, Kirill.
Yes.
K is constant. So what is the difference? You can take HK square multiplied by K cube, yeah? Or HK and take square. So K is constant. It's Camusian wave number.
So you consider the mode with a fixed k.
With a fixed Camusian k.
Consider it as a function of eta.
Yeah, I consider it as a function of time. And the physical wavelength, of course, for the given k is growing proportional to the scale factor. Correct? Agreed.
So for big eta, that is for early moments of time, there was one asymptotic behavior. For small eta, that is for late times, it has another
constant
behavior.
Constant, yeah.
So you match that.
What? Okay, so I match that.
From this you find what? C1 is a function of...
C1, I found actually that C1 here is equal to the amplitude of perturbation at the moment when perturbation was crossing the scale of curvature. You see? So here amplitude is fixed. Therefore, I know with which amplitude perturbation, okay, is brought up. Now, let's take the other scale. And we'll consider still the Sitter, where h stays constant. What will happen with this other scale? Okay, so it will follow this scale and will arrive somewhere here. And all other scale, okay, which are shorter, will arise somewhere here. So what you will form as a result, you will form the spectra of perturbation on large scales, and then this part will be just transferred here somewhere. You will form the spectra of perturbation, which will be precisely flat. And the amplitude of this spectra of perturbation in this flat part will be just Hubble constant during the Sitter.
At this point is not clear. Why it is just
Because amplitude here is 1 divided by L amplitude, right? This scale is h minus 1. Yeah? So you substitute h minus 1 here, then you know that the amplitude here is h. You see? And then, with this amplitude, the perturbation will be stretched to larger and larger and larger scale. Now, if duration of this sitter is extremely large, what happens actually, if you will wait a little bit more? Then, this part of the spectrum will be longer, longer, and longer, as you understand. And, okay, if you will wait a little bit more, then you will form even longer flat piece for the perturbation. And these kind of things where it was unclear what is the initial amplitude will be thrown to very, very large scale. If the sitter would have infinitely long time, durations and perturbation spectra would be logarithmically divergent. You see? So it would be flat, precisely flat. This is what would be formed in eternal de Sitter universe. Absolutely flat piece outside and this decreasing piece inside curvature scale. But as we know, okay, there is no eternal de Sitter universe. So maybe there is, but we do not care, as you know. Now, and also we know that on inflation, what happens, in fact, actually with Hubble constant? Hubble constant doesn't remain precisely constant. It changes slightly, right? Therefore, okay, and what is the change of Hubble constant? There is this equation, h dot minus 4p epsilon g epsilon plus p. Epsilon plus p for normal matter is always larger than 1. Of course, it's very close to 0 here on the sitter, but nevertheless, it's positive. Therefore, h is decreasing normally. And h minus 1, the size of Einstein elevator, is slightly increasing. And of course, here, the change of h as a function of scale factor is something like logarithmic sink. As you understand, scale factor grows exponentially on inflation. And h is changing just a little bit. So h, okay, is some function of logarithm a, something like this one. But nevertheless, you know that generically, if you have not phantom matter, but normal matter, like scalar field, then there is an epsilon plus p, there is positive, namely for scalar field, with potential epsilon plus p is phi dot squared, you see? And therefore, h is changing. How it will modify spectrum? You see? Okay, let's take this red one thing. When it's leaving horizon, scale factor has a certain value. Not scale factor, Hubble constant. And this is the value of Hubble constant precisely at the moment when perturbation with a given wave number left horizon. And this moment is, okay, is like this one. K is equal HA. For the given, is determined by this condition. For the given K, moment of time when perturbation quits curvature scale is given by this condition, which is equivalent to the condition K eta of the order of 1. I explain you how to get this thing, yeah? So 1 divided by eta is nothing more than just h multiplied by a. You remember this thing or not? Because h is a dot over a, yeah? So it's 1 divided by t, roughly speaking. Okay, and multiplied by a, what is this? T divided by a is, okay, 1 divided by eta. Yeah, this Russian type estimate that I was making, yeah, when you just make all integrals and derivative very easy. So, you understand now that what happens here. Perturbation with the scale, okay, K, with a given wave number, will leave this horizon at this moment of time and will be brought here somewhere. Now, what happened with the next perturbation? When it will arrive to the moment of horizon quitting, what happens here? Hubble constant will change a little bit, right? It will become smaller, so the next perturbation, which comes after the first perturbation, will leave horizon with the amplitude which will be a little bit smaller, right? So, and then it will arrive somewhere here, instead of arriving here, because appropriate Hubble constant for k at the moment when the other perturbation is smaller wavelengths was crossing horizon was smaller. Then, what happens for the third perturbation? It will arrive somewhere, okay, what is color? It will arrive somewhere here. You see? And the spectrum which you will get will be not flat, but will be tilted a little bit. Perturbation which leaves Kovich's scale at the beginning will have large amplitude because Hubble constant at this initial moment of time was a little bit larger. Perturbation which left Kovich's scale later will have smaller amplitude. And as a result, you will get spectra like this one. You see, which finally will be formed. And of course, maximal amplitude perturbation will take in the scale which quitted horizon immediately at the beginning of inflation. Now, what kind of dependence on the scale you expect? I told you that h is changing just a little bit, logarithmically the scale factor. Therefore, if you would ask what would be the spectra here, yeah, then perhaps you could guess that it will be logarithm k, something like this one, in some power. Nothing more, for generic model of inflation. And this formula is generalized for the case when you have real inflation with variable Hubble constant in the following way. So, for the given k, it means, this in subscript means that you have to take the value of Hubble constant at the moment when perturbation crosses the horizon. And what is Hubble constant in terms of energy density? You remember that Hubble, okay, there is this equation, FPG divided by 3 epsilon, yeah? So you could write immediately that this thing is proportional to square root of energy density divided by, if you prefer, Planck energy density, because this amplitude is dimensionless. And this thing should be taken at the moment of horizon crossing. So you see that the amplitude of the gravity wave at the given wavelength is dictated by the value of energy density at the moment when the given wavelengths cross Kovich's scale. So everything is very simple, and I didn't use any scenarios here. And also you understand that this consideration for the gravity wave could be used in an arbitrary, even De Sitter universe, when equation of state pressure is equal plus energy density. When we consider scalar perturbation, then it will not be the case, because in De Sitter, scalar perturbation cannot exist, as you understand why. Because actually scalar perturbations just do not exist there. You cannot disturb cosmological constant. And therefore, deviation of equation of state from pressure is equal to precisely minus energy density becomes important for scalar perturbation. While for the gravity wave, it's completely unimportant. This gravity wave, okay, exists irrespectively of any density perturbations. They can exist even in pure De Sitter universe. Yeah? So now let's go and consider. Yeah.
So if I change the equation of state dipole the other way?
No, because you understand, I told you that if you will not make phantom thing, yeah, then you see here epsilon plus p is always positive. So it means that h with the time is decreasing. And h with the time is decreasing means that for every next perturbation, which will come after my first perturbation, amplitude will be smaller, smaller, and smaller.
But if I make phantom?
If you make phantom, then it will be opposite situation. Because h will be increasing, h minus 1 will be going in this direction, and the next perturbation will be leaving with amplitude, which is larger than
So is phantom harder than the only way to tilt the other way?
Yeah. For gravity wave, it's the only way to tilt the other way. You see, when h is like this one. Yeah.
So, in some sense, what you're saying is,
can I rephrase it like that? Like, all this, this line, this 1 over lambda line, this is completely unimportant. We don't really care what happens.
Yeah, we care what is
only
here.
There's no, that's yeah. The only thing that is.
This is in fact what actually we care.
So you can draw these red dots there on that line, but yeah. Really that doesn't really matter.
Absolutely, because actually this part of the spectra, in fact, we will be generating everything just in this region, yeah?
That's fine,
yeah. So here you could change the things. You just have to be sure that in these scales it will come with the right amplitude,
and
with the minimal amplitude, you see?
Yeah.
So, but normally, you know that actually the whole thing you would precisely define in this asymptotic, yeah? And then here, you begin here, then see what will happen here. Also, here, for instance, I didn't write precise coefficient, but precise coefficient, okay, to write, you can do it as exercises, okay, of the order of one. So it's some kind of, after there is understanding all these kind of technical things, actually, it just doesn't require even brain, yeah.
Well, so what's the estimate this amplitude when inflation begins?
Yeah, because actually you see, when inflation begins, you don't care. Why? Because inflation can begin even at Planckian energies. But you understand that this amplitude of the order of one will be thrown in this case, in the scales which could exist horizon at present. And if you would have, for instance, duration of inflation so large, and if you begin with Planckian scales, then you will see that in gravity wave, even in gravity wave, you would spoil homogeneity of the universe because of quantum fluctuations, yeah? Completely, because on the scales which are the largest scale, there will be anisotropic universe. But you don't care about this thing because you live in some small sub-region of this incredibly large region. You see, because this is the amplitude which is determined by the energy density at the beginning of inflation. You see? But you will see also a little bit later that when I consider scalar perturbations, the scalar perturbations have amplitude which is higher than for the gravity wave, and therefore, in fact, the structure of the universe in larger scale, when homogeneity is the larger scale, are determined not by not by gravity wave, but by scalar perturbation. You see? So now let's go to the case of scalar perturbation, but in fact, besides of tricky thing, mechanism of the generation of perturbation in the scalar case is the same. Equations are technically more different, but you understand that here, because here is everything is very simple, extremely simple, but physics is more or less the same. Okay, so let's go, because, yeah.
Well, this number 10 to the minus 5.
10 minus 5 has nothing to do with this. For gravity wave, as you will see, the amplitude should be 10 minus 7 or something like this. Well, 10 minus 5 is for the gravitational potential, for the scalar perturbation. So, to which we will go, because right now we do not see this gravity wave, but nevertheless you see that...
Will it come from this mechanism or a similar mechanism?
It's similar mechanism, but a little bit more different.
Slava, maybe it was a little bit stopped here and clarify again, in order to understand what we are looking for as a function of what? So
amplitude as a function of the wave.
Just a moment. So we have here observed the spectrum.
Yeah.
At the moment, when the scale factor of the universe, the present day moment, is A. Is that right?
No, this spectra refers to the inflation and to the end of the inflation. Because at the end of inflation...
So, okay, so what is A in that formula where you have A here, at K proportional...
No, here A depends on K, as you understand. Because this equality determines U for the given K, scale factor, and H also at this moment of time. Spectra refers, you begin here at the initial moment of time, eta is equal eta initial with this spectra. Then you wait a little bit, then the spectra is developing like this one. At next moment of time, eta is equal eta bar, for instance. Then you will wait a little bit more, then spectra will become like this one. At next moment of time, eta is equal eta 2. And then, when you wait till the end of the inflation, okay, then the spectra, okay, will be at moment of time that is equal to F.
No, but we have to get some absolutely constructive formula. Suppose we observe the spectrum.
I gave you some absolutely constructive.
So what will be the equation which determines this moment?
I wrote you the equation which determines the amplitude at the end of inflation. You see, in appropriate scale. So this formula refers to the scales, okay, between h minus 1 at the end of the inflation and h minus 1 multiplied by the ratio of scale factors. Here it's h minus 1 multiplied by ratio of scale factor at the end of inflation to the scale factor at the beginning of inflation. You see? So this region which will be formed here, okay, which will be stretched, will be exponentially large compared to the curvature scale. Clear or not clear? Clear. Good. So now let's go to scalar perturbations. Okay, good. So, in the case of scalar perturbation, what we have? We have scalar field. Okay, let me consider also just the simplest case of scalar field, because I could do it more generically, but we want to understand really what is going on in the simplest case, and then we will see how formulas are generalized. Therefore, I will consider inflation which is due to the scalar field or scalar mode or whatever you want, yeah? And this scalar field, which is responsible for inflation, normally depends only on time. Now we have to disturb it a little bit, yeah? And consider small inhomogeneities here. Then, if we want to consider quantum fluctuations, what we have to do, we have to put head here. Okay, not big deal. Okay, even we don't need this head, why? Because all these things with head satisfy the same equation as without head. And everything what we will need from head, initial amplitude of quantum fluctuations, yeah? Because without head, this delta phi initially could be equal zero. But with head, okay, it's always like this one. So, now this thing also induces scalar metric perturbation. You see? Scalar metric perturbation exists only in the presence of inhomogeneities of energy density, because all degree of freedom of gravitational field are only gravitational waves. Now, you could do everything in an arbitrary coordinate system, yeah? But in principle, it's not tragic, where everything already was done 20 years ago in the most rigorous way, actually, to relax a little bit regressing and fix coordinate system. And when you fix coordinate system, we could actually write metric in very simple form. And in this particular case, metric fluctuations which are induced by this thing, okay, could be written like 1 plus 2 phi d eta squared minus 1 minus 2 phi delta ek dxa I dxk. Yeah? So, this thing induced Newton gravitational potential. And these two potentials are the same because of diagonal component of the energy momentum tensor special component for the scalar field are equal to zero. Yeah? Good. Now, of course, in quantum theory, as I told you, already heads appears here. But you understand that this phi is not its own degree of freedom, because phi doesn't exist without presence of delta phi. Therefore, of course, phi and delta phi should be quantized simultaneously, but there is a relation between delta phi and phi capital, okay, which is so-called constraint equation, like Gauss law, yeah, or what is this? We just unambiguously relate this thing. So it's, in fact, what we will do right now. what we are doing right now, or what we want to do. We are quantizing scalar field itself, but this taking into account of back reaction of gravitational field, which this scalar field induces. So it's okay, little modification of the standard quantization procedure for scalar field, because we are taking into account induced metric fluctuations. You see? Now, but as I told you already, in every quantum theory, of course, the basic thing is to solve classical equation after the quantization, no, I mean quantum field theory in external background, not actually all this scattering amplitude. You see where there are all these loop diagrams. But here, physics is very simple. Results are much more interesting than cross-section. Yeah? So you understand that if you want to get interesting result, you don't need to go to very, very, very long calculation. In fact, most interesting result require very short
calculation. Your background
is semi-classical. My background is classical. And in fact, actually what I am considering the interaction of these quantum things with a classical background. If you prefer, you could actually consider also background as a quantum background. It would be something like coherent state, you understand, yeah? And by the way, also homogeneous mode of scalar field, you don't need to quantize, because action is infinite, yeah, but it's homogeneous mode because of the infinity of the space. But this thing could be considered as a scalar condensate of many particles in the same state with k equals 0, yeah? So what you are doing, in fact, you are considering, people say that it's free scalar, free quantum field, but it's not free. It's quantum field which interacts with the condensate, yeah, of the other quantum field. In more sophisticated terms. So here we have to solve classical equations first to find evolution or to find two functions, phi and delta phi. So it's equation. If we want to determine phi and delta phi to function, we need at least two equations. We have the much more, many, many more equations. We have Einstein equation, we have Weinberg equation, whatever you want. You are free to use any two equations of them. Okay, and of course, it would be stupid to take the most complicated equation. Yeah? And therefore, of course, you have to take the simplest equation, solve them, and then if you don't trust your eyes, you could get answer, okay, which also will satisfy the other extremely complicated equation, you could substitute the things that verify that it's the case. So, and I suggest here to take as two equations, Klein-Gordon equation, because it follows from Einstein equation because of the Bianchi identities, and plus 0i Einstein equation, because it's extremely short, as you will see. Now, what is Klein-Gordon equation? Klein-Gordon equation looks like this one. It's nabla phi plus dv over d phi, okay? And now this box is the box in curved space, therefore I will write it in terms of metric like this one. So it will be d over dx alpha, square root of minus g alpha beta, d phi over dx beta, plus v phi is equal to 0. So v comma phi means this partial derivative. So you understand that when you substitute here metric, okay, in this form, then there will appear, first of all, in this Klein-Gordon equation, scale factor. But besides the scale factor, if you want to linearize this equation, there will appear terms which are linear in metric. You know, because if you would take some papers, not my papers, but some other papers, pioneering papers in this field, the people just will write a Klein-Gordon equation without taking into account that metric perturbations are also of the first order of magnitude, yeah? The same order of magnitude as delta phi. And for consistency, of course, you have to keep them. And second equation which I will use is G0i is equal to AV GT0i. Okay, now let me write, substitute here instead of phi, phi 0 plus delta phi. Instead of metric, I will substitute this kind of thing. I will linearize this equation, and then what I will get as a result, I will get the following two equations. And so delta phi 2 prime plus 2 a prime over a, delta phi prime, the same thing as for gravity wave, you remember, minus Laplace delta phi. So there is no real metric perturbation, but then there, of course, in this case, there appears masculine, because scalar field could be masculine, right? In distinction from gravity wave. And the next term which appears here is a squared v phi phi, so it's mass in the case of quadratic potential, delta phi. So it's all terms which are linear in delta phi, but there still should be terms which are linear in phi capital, in gravitational potential. And this term also should be taken into account that there are two terms of this type. So minus 4 phi 0 dot strik, sorry, phi capital strik. So this is background, this is the derivative of the gravitational potential. Plus 2 a squared v phi capital is equal to 0. So these two terms should not be neglected, and moreover, we will see in a minute, this term is the same order of this term, and moreover, it's twice larger for quadratic potential than this term. You see? So, and it's quite important for the precise shape of the spectrum. But of course, these three terms looks like for gravity wave, as you understood. Now, this second equation also takes it's not extremely simple, of course, but the second equation is really extremely simple. So it's phi prime plus h, and h, as I tell you, it's conformal Hubble constant, which is not normal Hubble constant, phi, okay, dimension here prime, and here gives you prime also, is equal 4p. Let's set g to be equal 1, yeah? It's okay with you. Okay, so let's set it here.
But anyway, would you explain why don't you take ik components?
You can take ik components. Which ik? For I equal k?
Well,
whatever, just you will get an equation which will be 5 times longer.
Oh, what you see. That's because you will have to understand why these extra equations that you disregard, they do not impose some extra.
Everything what is imposed, okay, was imposed already. And for I non equal k equation, okay, it imposes this kind of constraint. Now, you can take, if you want, I equal k equation, and then have fun solving this equation. But the other way to do the same thing, to take simple equation, find solution, substitute in this equation, and find that it's just satisfied.
Well, maybe then you have to discuss why.
No, I don't have to discuss why. I have to find solution. I have to discuss
the consequence of the Young identity.
Of course, because you understand that Einstein equation, okay, cannot contradict each other. And if you will solve one, you will find everything, that the other will be solved automatically. I can take 0-0 Einstein equation. At the beginning, when I was presenting this lecture, I was giving this lecture, I was taking 0-0 Einstein equation, which is a little bit longer. So, but then I decide why I have actually waste too much chalk. And I took just the shortest one.
But you see, it's natural question arises, so you say it.
I naturally answer to the natural
if
question.
You have to comment somehow, this, you know, lack of completeness of presentation.
Yeah, but look, okay, I do not think you pretend to completeness of my presentation, as you understand. And I tell you that if you want, but after lecture, we can borrow with a class a couple of equations. But okay, I guarantee you and convince that you will get the same final result. So why I should bother the other people with complicated equations? Yeah, if I can actually do the things with simple equations. So now, here we have two equations that we have also to find solution. But okay, just I can tell you that the other equations do not lead to any contradiction, do not impose any extra constraint. You have to be really very careful about selecting the other equations. For instance, you should never forget about constraint equation you are writing. This says, since, for instance, Grishuk forgot about constraint equation, got from the other equation extra mode for perturbation, and using this extra mode for perturbation, he wrote five papers, yeah, which were all equally wrong. So, you are right in this sense, but okay, what I am saying right now is really actually the things which is complete. Now let's consider solution of this equation again in two asymptotic region. Asymptotic region, one asymptotic region is inside Hubble scale and the other outside Hubble scale. And let's obtain solution of this equation. So, inside Hubble scale first. So, lambda physical, which is A divided by K, or 2P if you want, is much smaller than H minus 1, which is equivalent K eta much larger than 1. First of all, how can you estimate for the short wave perturbation what is phi prime? Well, when perturbation is oscillating very fast, yeah, and when you can forget about mass, then it's nice and more than just k phi. The second term, h phi, what is this? It's h phi is of the order of phi divided by, okay, conformal time. Because h is a divided by a prime. Clearly, this term is dominated in the limit when k is very large, yeah, because this condition is satisfied. Therefore, from this second equation, we have that phi is of the order of k minus 1, phi 0 prime delta phi. And then you understand that this phi prime, phi, for the shortwave perturbation is completely irrelevant. Everything is determined by scalar field itself. Therefore, for shortwave perturbation, you could forget about phi. The reason for that is very simple, by the way, because massless scalar field is very small, mass scalar field is very small mass, yeah, it has Jeans wavelengths of the order of horizon scale. And then when actually Jeans wavelengths is of the order of horizon scale, you can forget about gravitational potential, and everything is determined by pressure and energy density. Or you could just substitute this in first equation and you could find that these two terms could be neglected here. Now, what about this term? This term is of the order of mass squared. But if I would consider k squared, yeah, divided by a squared, much larger than mass squared, yeah? When mass is very small, and as we will see, we need mass. Small mass, then this massive term also can be neglected. Why is so? Because k is moment. If moment is much larger than mass, what we have ultra-relativistic particles for which mass is just small correction. Therefore, the three most important terms here are these three terms. Yeah? And in this case, equation, okay, for the given mode k is simplified to the equation 2h delta phi k prime plus k squared delta phi k is equal to 0. And this is nothing more than the things for the gravity wave, remember? Yeah, 2a prime h minus plus k squared delta phi. Therefore, in this case, I could write immediately delta phi is analog of h from the previous consideration. You see? Well, the equation says the same. Quantization is the same. Coefficient has the same also in Planck unit. Therefore, you could write in this case that delta phi k, yeah, is proportional ck divided by a exponent e chi eta.
So for large frequencies, you say that the scalar field, perturbation of the scalar field, decouples from the perturbation of the scalar mode of the node.
Absolutely. So and it's not surprising because in small scales, gravity is not so important. And of course, in this case also, what we have for the spectra of delta phi k squared k cubed, okay, square root versus lambda physical is the same spectra like this one, you see? And here is the scale h, minus 1. So here it's inversely proportional to the physical wavelengths. And here amplitude of scalar field is nothing more than just h. So the same, precisely the same spectra for the scalar perturbation, also assuming that mass squared term is smaller than h squared. You see, and we will see that really we need these kind of things. For on inflation, it's the case, because you remember for massive scalar field inflation, h was proportional m phi, yeah? And scalar field, massive scalar field inflation corresponds to the case when phi is larger than 1. So you see that mass is smaller than h in this case. Mass divided by h is 1 over phi on the m squared phi for the m squared phi squared potential. Therefore, mass here, because mass is very small, doesn't interfere with this spectra, which is nice and more than just spectra for massless scalar field. Mass scale is somewhere here. And mass scale is quite important, why? Because, okay, this spectra is in fact inversely proportional to square root of omega, yeah? And omega is square root of k squared plus m squared, you see? Omega enters there. When mass is negligible compared to k, then of course everything like follows the massless case. But when you consider moment smaller than mass, then the spectra drops down faster. But doesn't matter. Okay, now let's proceed further. And we know everything what we wanted to know about shortwave perturbations, like in Minkowski space. And now let's see how these perturbations evolve when they are stretched to the scale which are larger than the curvature scale.
Okay, good.
So, and now let me do some trick, because I can, of course, solve all the equation exactly, yeah? Doing, how it's called, honest, long work without thinking. Or what is the other way is to take equation and to try to simplify them, and then check the simplification which I did. They are okay or they are not okay, right? So which way you prefer? In fact, I will not leave you in choice. Yeah? So I will do it in a simple but non-rigorous way. But where you have to use your brains a little bit, yeah? Compared to the other case, then you just have to use your hands. So let me use on inflation to solve these two equations which I wrote there above, yeah? I want to solve this equation on inflation. Consistent system for the scale which larger than the curvature scale, then of course I cannot neglect these terms. And I want to simplify them and use for simplification, yeah, so called advantages of slow roll approximation. You see, I neglect certain terms here, and then I try to find solution. Then I found solution, but how can you be sure that this solution is really solution of equations where nothing is neglected? You just take this solution, substitute in the full equation, and then verify that the terms which I have skipped, they are really small. So I was right. If, for instance, you would find that some term which I skipped for this solution which I found is not small, then it means that I did something stupid and I have to begin from the very beginning. Or it means that I had no luck and wasted my time. Yeah? Okay, good. So now I want to use, as I told you, this slow roll advantage of slow roll approximation. But before I will begin to do this thing, what I have to do with this equation? You remember, okay, what was slow roll stuff in the case of scalar field? Okay, g is equal to 1, yeah? 1 half phi naught squared plus v phi. Okay, so what was slow roll here? Slow roll approximation was this kind of stuff, right? I was neglecting second derivative, I was neglecting first derivative. But here the derivative with respect to physical time. Therefore, if I want to use the same type of trick, I have to rewrite my equation going back, this above equation, going back from conformal time to physical time. Yeah, so I go from eta to t, which is integral a d eta. There, dot I will use instead of trig to denote derivative with respect to physical time t, and then I will rewrite the above equation in the following form. It's delta phi 2 dot plus 3h. Now h is really real Hubble constant, so it's a dot divided by a. Delta phi minus 1 divided by a squared Laplace delta phi plus v phi phi delta phi plus minus 4 phi 0 dot phi dot plus 2 v phi phi capital is equal to 0. 0, okay, 0 we will write here. Okay, good. So, where?
In 3h delta phi dot term.
Yeah, right. Your belief is correct. Okay, good. Now, second equation also, okay, it's phi dot plus h phi is equal for p phi 0 dot delta phi. Mm-hmm. Good, now, okay, what are suggestions? What we can skip here? Let's skip this term similarly how we did here. Why it's so? Because you understand that what does mean long wave perturbation? Long wave perturbation means nearly homogeneous mode. If for homogeneous mode we can skip this term, why not for very long inhomogeneous? Now, because I want to consider now perturbation with the scale lambda physical much larger than h minus 1, or in the other words, k eta much smaller than my 1, I can neglect, of course, this term, because this term is k squared delta phi, yeah? And, of course, you can forget about it since you understand that for long wave perturbation it's irrelevant, yeah? Because k divided by a is very small. Here you could write also k physical, what is this? A divided by k, yeah? So much larger than h minus 1, so k divided by a is much smaller than h. So compare these two terms and then you see the whole things could be skipped. Now here, what do you expect on life scales also? On life scale, you expect very quiet life. In the sense that nothing should change there. because of causality. Therefore, if you have gravitational potential there, then perhaps this gravitational potential should not change too much. Therefore, let's skip this too. What we will lose when we will be doing this thing? Of course, we will lose something, but not too much, as I would say. We will lose so-called decay mode, because I skip second order derivative, yeah, and it means that one of the solutions I lost. But this solution is really irrelevant. You could restore it after that and you'll find that it will disappear very fast. Then here we will do similar thing. And then the equations which we got begin look really very nice. So it will be 3h.
But you cannot disregard the right hand side of the second equation. Also, phi 0 dot is small.
Yeah, yeah. But it's phi 0 dot. But delta phi is good. 0, and if I would disregard, then of course, nothing will be left there from perturbation. So, delta phi dot plus v phi phi. Yeah, then I will kill everything, so don't write this thing still. Okay, let's rewrite this thing, yeah? So, let's express phi in terms of delta phi from here. What it will be? It will be equal minus, it will be equal 4p phi dot divided by h delta phi. But now for phi dot, I want to use equation for the background. And equation for the background, okay, which I will use, is this equation. Because background also is in slow roll approximation. And as a result, what I will get? I will get that this thing is equal minus 4p v phi divided by 3h squared. Because instead of phi dot, I substituted minus v phi divided by 3h. Yeah? Now, h squared I could express also in terms of the potential, because h squared is equal...
You must clarify that your phi is out. Not. Is the same as phi.
Which phi?
The consistency of your notation. Because initially you had phi 0.
I think it's just phi 0.
So this is the background. So
this is the ground, yeah.
So you omit it everywhere.
Okay, good. So I put it everywhere, okay? So...
Maybe it's easier to
omit. Maybe it's easier to omit. Okay, let's set it everywhere. You keep as you want. So, good. Now, okay. 3h divided by 4 pi squared, yeah, could be expressed in terms of potential from this second equation. Therefore, what I have here minus 1 half v phi divided by v, yeah, delta phi. Now, look at this formula. What is v phi multiplied by delta v phi? It's perturbation of energy density, right? And what is v? It's energy density of scalar field. In the leading approximation, and I will forget about phi dot, you see, perturbation of scalar field, energy density of scalar field is derivative of the potential multiplied by delta phi. Therefore, here you have nice formula like minus 1 half delta epsilon over epsilon. Or delta epsilon over epsilon for scalar field is equal minus 2 gravitational potential on the scale larger than the horizon scale. Recall this result from previous lecture. I told you that on the scale larger than the horizon scale, delta epsilon over epsilon and phi in non-decaying mode, they go together very, very easy, so it's just minus 2 phi. And by the way, if I would use, as Andrei suggested, 0, 0 Einstein equation, then I would get precisely this result of the scale larger than the horizon scale when I will make this simplification. Now what we will do, we will take this phi and substitute it here in this equation. Instead of phi capital, we will substitute this expression in terms of delta phi, and then we will get closed form equation for delta phi, which looks like this one. It will be 3h delta phi dot plus v phi phi, and then minus v phi squared divided by v delta phi is equal to zero. So you see this last term, or minus two. Oh, no, minus two, yeah. Because you see, you substitute here minus one half here, and then you are getting v phi squared divided by v, with minus sign, you see? So this term contributes, okay, to the effective mass of the scalar field, in fact, because v phi phi was mass of the scalar field, and this term comes because of the metric perturbation. Now, let's consider the simplest case when we have massive scalar field. For massive scalar field, this potential v is equal to 1 half m squared phi squared. What is this term? This term is m squared, right? And what is this term? It's minus 2m squared. So you see, because of the back reaction of scalar field, not scalar field, gravitational potential, okay, you switch the sign of mass squared of the scalar field. So it became like tachyonic. So you understand that in this sense, metric fluctuations are extremely important, of course. Very good. But now, let's solve this equation without referring to any particular potential, just in general case. So let's make break first, yeah? Okay? Then you can go watch Prime Minister for 5 minutes. I think it's more than enough. Yeah. Okay. So 20 minutes break, and then we will need 10 to 12. Yeah? Good.
Huh?
No.
It's boring.